Hello, everybody. This is your friend Kent C. Dodds, and I am joined by my friend Shirley Wu. Say hi, Shirley.
Hi, everyone.
Shirley is just a fabulous person. I know that. And if you don't know her yet, then by the end of this podcast, you will know that also. And so, Shirley, I'm going to give you a chance really quick to just introduce yourself. And so we get to know you a little bit. And then we can talk about whatever it is that we're going to talk about today.
Thank you so much, Kent. I actually really love your intro. I love that you say, like, hi, I'm your friend, Kent. I love that intro very much. Hi, I'm Shirley. I am an independent creator of data visualizations. That's the formal title I've given myself because I'm a freelancer and I can call myself whatever I want. And basically all that means is that I work with a bunch of different clients across mostly the tech, media, and journalism industries. And I work with them and with their data to design visualizations that help either explore the data for the questions that they might have or to communicate something, insights or patterns that they've learned with the data. So that's my day job.
Cool. So you have the freedom of being a freelancer.
Yes.
So how long have you been doing that?
I've been doing this since since the summer of 2016. So I'm coming on 3 years. I've learned a lot from the last 3 years. Yeah.
Yeah, I bet. what's your least favorite part of being a freelancer? Then we can get into the good stuff.
Yeah, we'll get
that stuff out of the way.
Oh my God, yes. My least favorite part is that I'm always, always thinking about money. I feel like such a horrible person that, like, every single day, I think about money at least once a day. Where will my next client come from, like client come from, and this paycheck will come from? And I especially hate it when, because I make myself an annual goal of how much to make, that sometimes I think of clients as just a number. And I hate that because, I like to choose clients that I really enjoy working with, like that are people that I really enjoy working with. And when I'm talking to a potential client and all I can think of them is the potential budget number, I really hate when I do that. Yeah, that's the thing I hate the most.
Yeah, that's interesting. Like, so you're talking with this person and you're like, oh man, I'm spending so much time with this person, but they are X number of dollars and I could be spending my time with this person who is X much more number of dollars or something.
It's not as much a comparison because if I'm talking to them, it means that I'm already very much interested in their project. And so I want it to happen. So it's more like, how big will this project be? And will I need to get another project while I'm working? Like, can I just spend all of my time on this for a few months? Or do I need to supplement it with another client that has to be smaller in scope so that I can juggle both? That sort of scheduling and logistics is the thing that I dislike the most because it just feels so cold. And I really don't like it. Yeah, but it's an unfortunate necessity that, like, no matter how much I enjoy working with them, I have to think about the reality of, like, making that quota I've set for myself.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And you know, at the end of the day, we live in a capitalist society, for better or worse.
Yeah.
And you've got to take care of yourself. Yeah, I can understand how that could be frustrating.
And I live in San Francisco or South San Francisco.
Our money is tight for everybody.
Yeah.
Well,
except for those people that are about to IPO.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, very true. So I'm actually curious about freelancing and having clients and things like that. That's something I've never really done. I'm just one thing that I've always been curious about is when you get a new client, do you have to, like, get yourself all set up with their equipment or with their, like, on their network, and now you're working in their projects, their repos, and you have to set up their monolithic project on your laptop? Like, how does that work? Are you typically working kind of on your own thing, and then you give them the code when you're done? Is that how does that work?
Yeah. So thankfully, it really depends on the client. But for most clients, the project that they come to me for is either an external marketing. So it's either like, you know, journalism, which is like a one-off article. And so like I get to mostly develop in my own repo. And then maybe like towards the end, I might hand over that code so that they can like deploy it. Mm. Or it might be like for a company's external marketing, which also means that I don't need to work within their particular code base. I don't think I've yet had a client come to me to work on something that's integrated into their product. And I think that makes a lot of sense because it would probably be a lot of time and effort to ramp up someone into their product just for them to leave after like, let's say 3 months. Totally. And so it doesn't make business sense for a company to do that. And I'm perfectly happy with that also, because I don't want to like ramp up for a company because that knowledge is not transferable in any way.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah.
And neither is that like, you know, oh, I have to install this version of the Java runtime environment. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Don't want to deal with that. Yeah.
No.
Well, cool. So you've had, like, as a freelancer for the last 3 years, you've had the opportunity to work on some really interesting projects, many, many different projects. But I think you have some specific ones that we talked about before that you'd like to share with folks. And so I'd love to hear about what these projects are and in particular, what you have learned from that. And then maybe we, as an audience, can pull out some specific things that we can learn and apply in our day-to-day development. Yeah. So what's the first one you'd like to chat about?
Yeah, definitely. So I started freelancing back in 2016. And throughout the years, I've had a few different projects that have been really, really meaningful to me. And this year in particular, in 2019, I've kind of made a few goals about what I want to do with my career and with my projects going forward. And those goals were very much informed by these few projects that have been really meaningful to me. And so the very first one is back in 2016, December 2016, I published a project called an interactive visualization of every line in Hamilton. And this was basically a labor of love for I think 4 months on and off, where because I was so obsessed with the musical Hamilton, and I just kept on, I have a very obsessive personality and a very addictive personality.
You like latch on to the specific things that you like.
Yeah. I have a personality of like, I'm either 100% and all in or 0% and not in at all. Mm. And it's like mostly good. Because it means that like whenever I decide to focus on something, I'm like all in. But it's also not so good because it means that if I get addicted to a TV show, that's all I'm going to do for like days. It's really not good when I go out. And if I have like a few shots too many, I'm like, go big or go home. Yeah. Yeah. It's really bad. But good in a career sense. Uh-huh. Anyway, sorry. So I was really addicted and I had this like on repeat. And at one point my fiance was like, I think you should just make a visualization out of this. And that's how that idea, whole idea happened. And so it's this kind of, we call it in the data visualization world, we call it scrolly telling because it's a project, it's a piece, it's kind of like an article. Or essay that as you scroll, I reveal more and more of the data and more of the insights to you. And then at the very end, I give you the exploratory tool to do the analysis that I did or do different kinds of analysis. And so that was really unexpectedly successful. Though I suppose in retrospect, because it's Hamilton, I probably should have expected the success of it. It was It was really unexpected. My Lin-Manuel Miranda actually tweeted it, and I think I lost. I think I stopped breathing for like a few minutes. And then he actually, when I saw the notification that he followed me back, I was like, what just happened? Yeah. And then I had to calm myself down and be like, he's just a person. He's just another human being. He's in a really awesome, talented human being, but he's just another human being. Anyways, I think because of him, it had really great success as well. But I think the two main things that I really took away from that is the first being that was the first time when I had made a project where the response was extremely meaningful to me. And by that, I mean that I had a lot of people tweeting me that was just starting their computer science classes in school. And they were like, this is so cool. I didn't know that you could do this with code. And it was really colorful. So there were, I had a lot of women, a lot of girls telling me oh, I didn't know you could do this. Kinds of things by coding. I am taking a CS class right now, or now I want to take a CS class. Or the moment that made me the happiest was when a woman tweeted me that she and her son were just starting to learn CS together, or to learn to code together, and that they also love visualizations and they also love Hamilton. And she was like, I can't wait until my son gets home so I can share this with him. And I just absolutely love that, because
That's
not only
adorable.
isn't that amazing? Because I'm such a sucker for parent kids, whenever that goes really well, familial stuff, just I'm just such a sucker for it. And I just was so happy that not only are they, coding, and this inspired them, but also that this brought this mother and son hopefully closer. And that was just so amazing.
That's
And that,
wonderful.
thank you. Yeah. And so I think that was the first project that I was like, wow, I can, what I do, I can actually inspire people. especially to show them that coding can be beautiful and colorful, and makes you Matrix is cool, but it doesn't have to look like green characters.
It's not all
Yeah.
just like the terminal, you know?
Yeah. And that was the first moment I realized that. And so that's one of the reasons why that project is so special to me. And the other one was kind of just realizing that before that project, I've always thought of data visualization as having to be really precise numbers, and the visualizations I'm showing you has to be very accurate. And it does, because data visualization, like statistics, it's very easy to misinform people. Or it's even if you have the best of intentions, because we all have our biases, it's pretty easy to subconsciously or unconsciously bake our own biases into our data visualization. And if we want to be really malicious, it's very easy to mislead with a chart. And so while it's really true that you should be very accurate and precise, that was the project in which I learned that the most powerful is actually to connect with my audience on an emotional level. Like, they won't remember that, the, I don't know, the statistics that I might have quoted them, but they will remember what I wrote about, what I learned from the data that gave them an emotional response. And so I think precision and numbers is important, but emotion and giving my reader delight and letting them, Yeah, like giving them that sort of an emotional part is very important also. So that was
I think that like can be applied to even products, people who aren't building fun visualizations. Like we should be, you know, as a novelist, a amateur novelist, one of the things that we talk about a lot in the writing world is the emotions that we want to elicit out of the reader. Mm-hmm. That's what we should be focused on. And I think the same applies to your product, whether you're building like, you know, a bank dashboard or a social mm-hmm. media platform or whatever it is, to be mindful of the emotions that you're eliciting out of the viewer. And maybe if you are a bank dashboard, some of those emotions might be negative, but like finding a way to present it in a way that you know, just makes people's lives better, is something that we could all probably be more mindful of.
Yeah, definitely. And I would love to talk about your novel offline.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So, I also...
Oh, go ahead.
You know, I was just going to say, I also really love those designs that we're seeing more and more of that are like just a little bit quirky. And like, I mean, it has to be on brand, but like, you know, those ones where like, I can't remember who it was, but like, was it a Yeti that like, as you, or a bear that like, as you type your password, it just like looks at the password or something? Like those little touches in design are so great, I feel like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It gives you a little bit of, I don't know. Delight, like you said. So what's this next project about?
Yeah, so the next project is a lot less fun and a lot more serious. So the next one is one that I did with The Guardian back in the fall of 2017. And so that one is with The Guardian US team, and it's called Bust Out, and it's called How America Moves Its Homeless. And that article is all about the homeless relocation programs that certain American cities have. And it was an incredible project of like, you know, it's the Guardian. So it was so much journalistic integrity. They spent about a year and a half collecting data from about 16 cities. And they, I think, were able to collect about 20,000 data points of homeless people who were given a bus ticket. Like a city had purchased a bus ticket for them to be bused out of that city. And there was this whole kind of like long form, investigative journalism into kind of like why cities might do that, if that's effective at all. How do these individuals, these homeless people that did get a bus ticket, how did they feel? How did they fare? And this was an extremely meaningful project to me because, it's a very important topic. I've always, before this fall of 2017, I've always kind of shied away from like very serious topics, because serious topics are very controversial. And if I don't do it right, I will get backlash, and rightfully so, because I didn't do it right. And so I want to treat serious, like meaningful topics with a level of respect, with a level of care that I wouldn't be able to do individually, because my area of expertise is in data visualization. It's not in, you know, homeless busing across countries, or it's not in, like whatever other, topics that I could choose from. And this was the first time that I got to work with a team of like super talented journalists that, you know, have done all of their research and have talked to experts. And I got to kind of kind of lend what I could to the project. And it was also very well received. I know that there was some talks that, like, I think this triggers some policy talks. And so this one was super meaningful to me because it kind of taught me, again, like what I could do if I worked, I don't want to say the right people, but like if I could just team up with people who are working on these super important topics, the kind of things that I could help with. And these are kind of the topics that I've always, like, there's always been topics that I've been wanting to do that are really important to me that I've never had the courage to do because I would be scared that I would mess it up. I would not do it justice. And this is the project that really gave me the courage to kind of like go forth and try my hand, especially now that I have a little bit more experience and more of a portfolio. I think it's a little bit easier for me to reach out to experts in the field and be like, would you like to collaborate on this topic?
Yeah, and like get the help that you need to make sure that you do it justice.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Well, it's an amazing project. So all of these projects will be linked in the show notes. And I strongly recommend people look at these because I'm looking at them and they're pretty cool. It's amazing the things that you can accomplish with code.
Yeah, definitely.
So there's your next one that you sent me here is this send me love thing. Can you tell us about that one?
Yeah. So that was for SF MoMA. This was last spring 2018. And so SF MoMA had approached me. They had a project called Send Me SF MoMA back in 2017, where you could like text the number and you can text it things like send me art or send me San Francisco or send me love or send me heart or and they'll take that keyword and match it to and like an art piece in their collection, and they'll send you back that art piece. They'll like do the best that they can to match it and send you back an art piece. And the idea was really fascinating because the basic premise is that they have something like 30,000 pieces in their collection, and they can only show like 5% of it at any given time in their actual like physical brick and mortar museum.
Right. Okay.
And so this was like an idea of like, how can we give people access to the rest of the collection? And they ended up receiving 5 million texts.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Across, I think, the span of a few months, I think.
That is crazy.
Right? Yeah. So, and then they contacted me and another local studio separately to do projects. And so what they wanted from me was like something that was more artistic. And this was, so the thing I ended up choosing to do is instead of focusing on the big 5 million texts, I decided to focus on individuals. So I chose 5 individuals that I thought had like really interesting interactions with the service. And then I just looked at a week of their interactions. And this is complete, I don't know why. I think it's because I was in Japan at the time and there was a lot of flowers and cherry blossoms, and I just made them, I ended up representing each day of their interactions as flowers and trees. Mm-hmm. So, but this one was really fun to do. And I think it might have been the first time a client has been like, go forth and do art. They like literally had, because all of my clients have, like when I work with clients, it's for visualizations, and they must tell like a story correctly, or like, you know, they like, it has like, there's a lot of back and forth between my clients and I to make sure that the visualizations we're building fits their specific needs. And I've definitely also had clients that are like, this is a data set, or this is the API. Do whatever you want with the data, but like tell a story with it. And this is the very first time that like a client was like, make art and we'll pay you for it.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And I was like, what is this freedom that I'm getting? Like, what is this creative freedom? But this one was just personally really important. Just to realize how much I love art. I grew up painting and drawing for 14 years of my life, and I gave it up when I went to university. And this really made me realize I want to do more art again.
Yeah, it kind of made you like introspective a little bit and think, yeah, what do I really want to do in life?
Yeah, it even made me introspect in the sense that like I realized that the biggest reason why I gravitated towards data visualization is that it's the most art sort of thing I can do that tech companies will still pay me for. So it was like, I didn't realize this for years, but this project made me realize like that's the biggest reason why I did data visualization, because it was basically the closest to art I can get.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And you do create really cool things. This one's very interesting. It's very cool.
It's like so out there.
Yeah, I like hovering over the tree and seeing all the random like pictures and things that people got when they
Right?
yeah,
And I
lemon.
love, yeah. And I love the random keywords that they ask for.
Yeah. Someone said, show me eyeballs, and oh my goodness, that will haunt my dreams.
Because it's a modern art museum, like not everything that they get is like, like some things are just kind of really weird that they
Yeah.
get. So, and that one was just kind of really fun in a I'm like getting as close to an anonymous individual. Like it's really weird because I feel like after working on that project, I know so much about these individuals for the span of a week. But I know like in terms of like what might have been going on in their lives to be asking for those sort of things. Because some of these people will like ask throughout the day. Like some of them will like text a few hundred
Oh
times
my
in
goodness.
that week. But I know absolutely nothing about them.
Yeah, it's
So yeah.
like, show me breakfast, show me
Yeah.
toothbrushes, show me.
And you can even tell like the blocks of time that they were probably at work or at school, or because like they'll like rapid fire text and then they'll like disappear for a few hours and then they'll rapid fire text. Yeah.
Oh, that's fascinating. Cool. So this next one is called Legends. Can you tell us about that one?
Yeah, so that one was actually a personal project. And there was two main motivations for it. One was going back to kind of what I learned from Bust Out of wanting to do more topics that are important to me. This one is the 51 female Nobel laureates since 1901. And I think this one was, I just wanted to work with a data set of just women that I felt were legendary. And I don't know how, but one night I was like, Nobel Prize winners, they're legendary. And so that's the first motivation. And the second motivation is that for the last few years, I've kind of been I've been thinking about one of the things I've been thinking about a lot is that I spend so much time and spend months and months like working on these projects and like I throw all of my like love and like tears and sweat into it, and I probably get like 30 seconds of someone's time. Like I'll be really lucky if I get like a few minutes of their time, and that just makes me really, really sad. So yeah. Especially because like and they might be like reading this, but then they might read like half a page and then get distracted by like a million other things on their screen, and then maybe they'll forget about it. And I think this is kind of like a selfish ego thing, but like I just really want to make work that people will linger in for longer. And so for the last few years I've been kind of really interested in physical installations, like installations that are immersive, that people have to walk into the space and like that the whole thing just hits you. And you can't be I mean you can still be distracted by your film, but hopefully you're not. And you just have to be there and you have to be present. And I think there's something really powerful to that. And I've been kind of like obsessed with this idea of like how can I bring my work and how can I bring what I've learned about creating data visualizations and data-driven narratives and stories into the physical world that people can kind of walk through and learn from and take something away from. And so that was another motivator behind this Legends project of one of the things I realized while thinking through this is that the reason why I can't imagine any of my work in three-dimensional space is because on the day-to-day, I work in two-dimensional space. Mm-hmm. And so every time I thought about a room, I can only think about like projectors and screens, which is completely like, it's very sad to then, because then I'm still missing that third dimension. Mm-hmm. And then when I realized that, I was like, wait, I should just learn how to code in 3D. Mm-hmm. And so I taught myself 3JS.
Sounds simple enough, yeah.
Well, and then I taught myself 3JS, and I got like a lot of help from Matt Dezel on Twitter. He's amazing. Mm. I made this. It's not perfect. It was like a three. I taught myself 3JS and made this in like 3 weeks.
I think it's pretty cool.
Thank you. It's like I know. You know how like when you work on your own project, like you know all of the things that are wrong with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I know all the things that are wrong with it, but this one really kind of gave me the courage to go forward for my 2019 goal, which is I want to start doing physical things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what are you working on in the physical realm then?
Nothing as of yet. I guess my biggest project for the last few months have been renovating this condo with my fiance. That's mm-hmm. kind of physical.
Yeah.
But once we've moved in and settled in, I think I'm going to start trying to like prototype. The first goal I have is to just take this Legends project and make it physical. Mm-hmm. So like maybe try prototyping, starting with like just paper of like how the crystal shapes could look like in the physical world. And then trying to experiment with different materials and different techniques, because like I have no experience or background in this, so like I need to start from zero. But that's the like long term multi year goal of hopefully building something that people can walk through and be surrounded by. Mm-hmm. And the biggest thing is that hopefully they can learn something and take something away from it. And I'm hoping that what I build in the physical, I always want them to have a digital counterpart, because I'm very much aware of the fact that physical has its limitations. Mm-hmm. Of like, it biases towards people that live nearby. It biases towards people that like, if I decide to charge for tickets, people that can afford the tickets. Mm-hmm. And so I always want a digital version, but the most important for me is that I hope that I'll build these with narratives and stories about kind of like the topics that I've come to find very important for myself. So those are thanks for listening to the rambling.
No, that's wonderful. And I feel like the world is getting closer to a place where you could really thrive as a digital or a data visualization, like digital world, physical world mesh, where we can have you know, augmented reality, and you could walk into mm-hmm. this room with these glasses on and you interact with these things or in VR or something like that. I feel like you would really thrive in that kind of an environment. And then actually making physical representations of this art. The drawback of physical is like I can click on something and it can like expand and I can drill down, but you can't really do that quite so well in the physical world. You can just be creative, but like if you could put that into a VR type of situation, then it is an immersive experience, but also mm-hmm. something that you could do some pretty cool effects and whatever to give some insights into that data.
Yeah.
So exciting things ahead.
Yeah. And I think like what you just said as challenges, like I hope that one day I get good enough with the physical. And I keep saying the physical because like it's like a big question mark for me still. Like I'm not quite sure how I'm going to achieve it. But, like I hope that one day I get good enough with that, that I can be like, oh, like, you know, we can't click on something and expand, but like maybe we can do something that's like similar in the physical world. Mm-hmm. Like maybe like how can we use this challenge and go get around it to make it into our advantage? Mm-hmm. I think that would be really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very interesting. I look forward to perusing the museums where your physical manifestations are displayed.
I don't know. I hope so. That's my big dream. Although, you know, side tangent, I've been having a little bit of thought of like, where do I actually want my work to be? Like for the longest time, I thought I wanted to be in a museum because I feel like as an artist, like that's like the big goal, right? But then I'm like, museums are actually very like, it's actually very excluding also. Yeah. Like you have to, like SF MoMA costs $25 per entry. That's a lot of money. And like, what does it mean to create art for kind of that sort of, I mean, I'm like, this is kind of hypocritical because I can't afford to go to SF MoMA, but like, what does it mean to create art for, yeah, like a,
for everyone,
an audience. Yeah. And I feel like this is probably some, I'm probably just going into a territory that I'm unfamiliar with, and probably artists all around the world have already thought about this. And now I'm just starting to think about it. Like, yeah, what does it mean to create one for everyone versus like create one for just an audience that can afford it?
Yeah. Well, you know, you see those videos of people who make stairs that are actually like piano keys or you know, like these different, you know, that just happen in the streets and whatever. And I love those kinds of things. I think they're really interesting.
Yeah, I think it's the physical versus digital attention for me again, like the like something that everybody around the world has access to versus like something that only people there has access to.
Yes, yeah, that's
lots of things.
That is tricky. I guess that's where VR comes in handy too. It can be that almost physical, not quite, but
but like VR, I also have opinions about that. Like, you know, it's still not very affordable. Hopefully, like, you know, in a few years' time, it becomes a little bit more affordable. But like, it's still like hundreds of dollars for a headset. Yeah. That's a very limiting market too.
Yeah, we need.
That's my opinion.
You know, we all need to live in Star Trek, where like there is no poor, and we're all just, you know, just working hard to do as much as we can and enjoy life. And
yeah, sounds good.
So sure, I really enjoyed chatting with you about these projects and kind of your experience and learning and growing through this. What would you say is something that people can go home and take away and something specific that they can do out of the learnings of your personal experience?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things is, I mean, I don't want to be like, this is what you should do. But I think one of the things that have really benefited me the most is like, I actually had a elementary school teacher that said that she, every day at the end of the day, she reflects on her day, what she did well and what she didn't do well, what she learned, what she wants to do, she wants to learn going forward or wants to do going forward. And I've applied that since every day in my life. And so I try to every day reflect on what I've done well or not well and what I want to do going forward. And I think, like, I think, you know, and I think I have to do this a lot just because I'm a freelancer and I have to think a lot about my future and where money is coming from. But even if you're not a freelancer, I think it's very beneficial to just kind of take a moment to reflect and think about where you might want to head towards next.
Yeah, be mindful and intentional about the direction you're going.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess there are people who can, you know, jump in the canoe and just go with the flow, or they can grab a paddle and be intentional about the direction where they're going.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fantastic advice. Thank you for sharing that. So as we wrap up here, Shirley, is there anything else that you'd like to talk about or mention before we close up?
No, I don't think so. I'm really grateful that I got to talk to you about all of this, Kent. Thank you so much for letting me. This is probably the most self-absorbed interview/podcast I've ever done, where I just talked about myself.
I hope that that you don't really feel that way, and I hope that people who listen to this can pull apart the pieces where or the insights that you presented to us, because I really do feel like these projects have taught you something valuable, and we can pull out some specific insights to apply into our own lives. And that's what this podcast is all about, is to hear about people's personal life experience and then pick away at the pieces that, that can be self-applied. So
yeah, I appreciate that.
So Shirley, if people want to keep up with you, how do they connect with you?
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter at SXYWU. GitHub. Actually, I'm on everything at that handle. GitHub, Twitch that I will hopefully restart soon, YouTube channel with all of my archived live codes. I just recently started an Instagram because I hear that when you do art, Instagram is where it's at. So there is that. And my website is the same, sxyw.com.
Fantastic. All right. So we'll get links to those too for people. But Shirley, it's been a wonderful chat with you. Thank you so much for chatting with me.
And definitely. Thank you so much for having me. It's been super fun.
Oh, good, good. What people don't know is that we got to spend like an hour just chatting.
Yeah.
And it's been awesome. So thanks, everybody. I hope that this was helpful and interesting to you. It was certainly interesting to me. And we will be in your ears next time. So goodbye.